Last time I was trying to go verse by verse and try to extrapolate the style of writing of Amos, the first classical prophets, which lived in a very important time of the rise of the Assyrian Empire and the threat of the Assyrian Empire all over the ancient world as they knew it then. And you saw that from Akkadian, specifically from Akkadian, or if you want to say Neo-Assyrian, which is a dialect of Akkadian, there are many, many technical terminologies, expressions, idioms that Amos used as a vernacular of the language of the time. Meaningly, once the Assyrians spoke Assyrian, the Hebrew spoke Hebrew, but the idiomatic expressions were very, very close to each other. And what I try to do is really to transfer you to the 8th century before the era. Now, of course, this is the only way really to understand any given prophet, is the language is the medium. Once you know the language of antiquity, you'll be able to extrapolate and to understand better, and then to go to all kind of different interpretation of Amos as applied to modern time. But as far as I'm interested, I'm not interested in the application of Amos ideas, at least on this series of lectures, but I'm interested to show you the depthness of Amos' prophecies from the point of view of linguistics and philology. Last time we finished with verse 11 in chapter 1. What I will do today, I will continue on to chapter 2, and the third lecture I will pick various phenomena in Amos in light of the ancient Near East, because I cannot go chapter by chapter. I will never be able to finish it. I saw it. So, Amos chapter 1, verse 11, Ko amar Adonai al shlosha pishay edom al arba'a lo ashivenu, al otfo b'cherev achiv v'shichet rachamav, v'yitrof la'ad apo v'chevrato shemara netzach, v'shilachti esh betiman v'achla armonot botzora. Shlosha pishay edom al arba'a lo ashivenu, I should not forgive. 3 and 4, as I say, make 7, the climactic number. Arodefo b'cherev achiv. B'cherev means by means of war. Cherev does not mean a sword, but means by means of war. The bet is the bet preti, we call it in English, or bet hashimush, which means by means of. If you pay attention, for instance, the bet of the bet preti, by means of, is attested in many, many cases in the Tanakh. For instance, if you take it at Amos Perek Bet, verse 6, Ko amar Adonai al shlosha pishay Yisrael v'arba'a lo ashivenu al michram b'kesef tzadik v'evyon ba'avur na'alaim. The bet is the bet preti, bet hashimush, means by means of. And we've discussed that the achiv means his ally, and we've discussed that the v'shichet rachamav, we've said that v'shichet rachamav, he destroyed his Rahamav, means his allies too. And I proved it, that this Raham is not Raham to show pity, but Akkadian Ramu, which means to love, and then it means really to be loyal to, and it means also in the treaty sense, and I've discussed it. The last part of the Pasuk is extremely important and extremely difficult, but if I'm not mistaken, I've dwelt on it last year with you here, and I just like to fresh your memory a little bit. Vaitrof la'ad apo v'evrata shemara netzach refers, of course, to the viciousness of Edom attacking his allies in the treaty. In other words, v'shichet rachamav, he destroyed the treaties, the treaty that they have together. Vaitrof la'ad apo v'evrata shemara netzach. Last time, if you remember, last year, I said that Shemara over here has nothing to do with biblical Hebrew shamar. Some of you remember it. Because the biblical Hebrew shamar, to guard, usually will take a direct object. To guard what? Shamar et something. Now here we have a real Akkadian influence. A real Akkadian influence, which means sometimes the influence is not exactly a direct influence of one language to another, but rather stereotype formulas that are being used by the various nations in the area. But here we have a direct influence. Vayitrof la'ad apo ve'evrato shemara netzach. If you see from the parallelism, Evra has to be parallel to Shemara. La'ad has to be parallel to Netzach. So if Shemara is parallel to Evra, so Shemara cannot be to guard. Vayitrof la'ad apo ve'evrato. I'm sorry. It's not parallel, but it's entities. I mean, they come together. So the Shemara over here is not Hebrew Shamar 1, but rather Hebrew Shamar 2. There are two different Hebrew Shamar. Shamar 1, to guard, and Shamar 2, which means to rage. How do we know that? First of all, let us go. Davar Rishon, first thing, when the scholar... the training that I've received, he doesn't go to any other places but to the inner biblical sources. You have to see if the verb, this is what you call methodology, you have to see if the verb shamar, shin mem resh, which does not mean to guard but rather means to rage, is attested somewhere else. Now you agree with me that usually shamar has to take a direct object. You cannot say ani shamarti. Shamarti what? Shamarti the Torah. Shamarti tabayit. I had to guard something. The case is, of course, the clear case, of course, is in Jeremiah 3:5. If you have the Tanakhim with you, please open with me. Jeremiah 3:5. And there it says, Jeremiah 3:5, Halo me'ata karata li avi aluf ne'urai ata. Number 4, 5. Hayim tor le'olam, im ishmor lanetzach, hineh dibarti, dibart v'ta'asi ara'ot v'tuchal. What's parallel to shamar? Natar. Now, here of course shamar does not mean to guard. You cannot say hayim tor le'olam, im ishmor lanetzach, im ishmor lanetzach what? But you see the very phenomenon that shamara and netzach and translation. With God, rage forever. Will be angry forever in Yirmiyahu. Now this Natar in Yirmiyahu, I'm just refreshing your memory a little bit, this Natar in Yirmiyahu does not mean Natar to guard. We have in the biblical Hebrew Natar to guard, but the Natar to guard that we know is of course very, very late. Is of course the Natar in Shir HaShirim. Samuri notera et akeramim, karmi sheli lo natarti. This Natar is not this Natar. 3:5. This Natar is not the same Natar. Now you have two different Natar in biblical Hebrew. One Natar means to guard. And this Natar to guard is proto-Semitic Nagar. Nun Gain Resh. Which will come to Hebrew as Natsar. You're speaking about merger last time. Okay? You spoke to me about merger. Take a look at the merger over here of the Gain and the Tet, which in Hebrew is Natsar. So I think I've shown you the phenomenon already that the Ghain in proto-Semitic, which is preserved in Arabic and preserved in Ugaritic, is usually comes in Hebrew as a tzaddik and in Aramaic as a tet. One more example. Metain Aramaic means to find. Magaya in Aramaic is to reach or to find. And of course, is the Hebrew matzah. Okay? So this natar is the natar of Shir HaShirim, but is the Aramaic variant of Shir HaShirim of the Hebrew natar. And we know that the influence of Aramaic, the influence of late Hebrew on Shir HaShirim. The other natar, which means to rage in Biblical Hebrew, is always appear in parallel. This is natar 2. Natar 2. Which this is the Akkadian nadaru. Now, no problem of the hilufim, of the interchange or exchange, or the chain between the tet and the dalet. The dentals are interchangeable. The dalet, the tet, and so on. In many, many cases. Now, if you pay attention to this natar, is parallel in Biblical Hebrew with nakam, nun, kuf, mem. And nakam and natar is to take revenge, of course, lotikom velotitor. And this is, of course, in Leviticus 19:18, if you want just for yourself, lotikom velotitor. And also, natar is also parallel to riv, resh yud bet, which means to argue vehemently. For instance, in Tehillim, kuf gimel 103, Tehillim 103, verse 9. We have there. It is stock formula. Stock formula. Lo lanetzach yariv velo leolam yitor. Lo lanetzach yishmor velo leolam yitor. Also, natar itself stands by itself sometimes in Jeremiah 3:12. Not 3:5 this time, but 3:12. Aloch v'karata ad advarim ha'ele tzafona v'amata shuva mishuva Yisrael umashem lo apil panai b'chem ki chasid ani neum Adonai lo etor le'olam. I shall not rage forever. So you see, it's olam, it's la'ad, it's netzach, with natar and shamar, stock formulas. So, going back to our, in our case, to in Amos, Akkadian, shamaru, is always parallel to nadaru. That's my case now, that Akkadian shamaru is the regular palim to nadaru, which means to rage, to have vengeance. Many, many cases. I'm not going to even quote, I just want to show you the phenomenon. Shamaru nadaru. Now, this shamar is here in Amos. If you wish, we'll translate it the following. And you don't see it in your translations, by the way, in any English translation. I don't know, even the new JPS would not translate it this way. So, yes, the JPS, this article was written by my professor, Alav Shalom Moshe Hel, about the homonyms of Shamar Shamar. So, are we to translate Vayitrof La'ad Apo? Are we to translate Vayitor La'ad Apo? He raged, his anger raged forever. With the fey is some type of an error of taraf af in Bereshit. Vaitor la'ad apo, and his anger rage forever. Ve'evrato shemara netzach, and his anger raged forever. Ha'evra shelo shemara netzach, raged forever. In English, lo hayu rahamim bichlal le'edom. In this case, is absolutely a borrowed, a borrowed word from Akkadian, shamaru, to rage, attested two times here in also in Yirmiyahu. And the case is, of course, very, very clearly the shmara over here is indeed has nothing to do with shamar. I want to continue. כה אמר אדוני על שלושה פשעי בני עמון וארבעה לא אשיבנו על בקעם הרות הגלעד למען ארחיב את גבולם. אבן עזרא, סעדיה וקמחי, understand הרות as הרים. For my life, I don't understand why and how. Ibn Ezra, Saadia, and Kimchi, Radak, understand Harot as to mean Harim. Vashim Ubarot. They cannot by any means justify this because we have Har Harim, we have Hararei, we have Hararam, we have Harei, but we don't have the form Harot. Beside, מה כל מה שאני מנסה לומר פה? That the idea and the ideology of the Assyrian Empire and the Assyrian kings, if you read the annals of the Assyrian kings, you would automatically understand that one of their cases was really Levakea at Harot, in a minute I'll discuss it. But before that, always before you go to any, there's a methodology if you study Tanakh, if before you go to any Semitic language, you have to do the following. You have to have the inner biblical references. Two, Mefarshei Ha'Me'ah Binayim. Two, Mefarshei Ha'Me'ah Binayim. Three, the Semitic languages were found in the early 20th until now. Two Kings 15-16, Bakasha. Vayach et kol he'harot, vayach et kol, Heharoteya Bikeya. I don't know what is the form Heharoteya. Don't ask me. It's very difficult, Heharoteya. The Hehaidi'ah there. Has to be Vaivaka et kol Haroteya. Anyhow. So Levakeya Harot, to split open the pregnant woman, is a stark phrase, Rabbi. And the case, the most important case, of course, is in 2 Kings 18:12. ויח את כל ויח את כל הערותיה ביקיה. It's very difficult syntactically. You could see something is wrong in the pasuk. מה זה הערותיה? אתה חושב שזה definite article?
האיש.
Okay, but what is the harotea? I don't understand. The idea there is bothers me. I'm not going to deal with it now. But the idiom is levakeya harot, and of course in 2 Kings 8:12, and this is the only two cases that we have, ola lehem teratesh veharotehem tevakeya. 2 Kings 8:12. Do you have it? 8. Somebody wants to read? Bakasha, tikra. Okay, so you have the very classical case to leratesh et ha'olalim, to do the utmost cruelty. The utmost cruelty is to leratesh, I don't know how to translate it into English, to what? To split, I don't know. Leratesh means to take to pieces, to take the pieces, the olalim, to smash, maybe the skull really, or really to take to pieces, to smash the olalim. The olalim is not even yet ladim ktanim, lenapetz bidyuk, lenapetz, and et harot levakeya. You have three in Hosea, is the same period, a little bit later than this. Classical case in the Assyrian annals is to split open the Assyrian would many, many times, for instance, Tiglat Pileser, it starts from Tiglat Pileser the first, which is about 11, 1114 to 1076 before the era, he says completely, he says something like this: Usharrit libbi arati. He split the wombs of the pregnant woman. Usharrit, to split open. The surrutu in Akkadian is the semantic equivalent of levakea. Libbi means the womb. Euphemism, lev in Hebrew. You know that lev is euphemism also for woman womb, also sometimes for man's part. Usharrit libbi arati, harot. Other language, yes. Ushanpil lakuti. He split the womb of the pregnant woman. He took out the eyes of the infants. Unapil lakuti. Unakis kishadati. Levakei anashim arot. Lotzi ta'inayim shel ha'iladim haktanim. Velachtoch. And to cut the throat of the strong man. And this is classical, attested with Usharrit Arati in Tiglat Pileser, Ashur Natsipal, Sanherib, Sargon, Tamid, boasting about the killing of the pregnant woman. So, most probably Amos is using over here the classical case of this. Why all of this is done? Because Larhiv et Gvulam. Now, Larhiv Gvul, again, is a technical terminology from the political and military world, Larhiv Gvul. Now, we know about Larhiv Gvul is tested again in Exodus 34:24, Deuteronomy 12:20, Deuteronomy 19:18, Deuteronomy 33:20. Larhiv Gvul, to enlarge the border. Very interesting to note that Akkadian speaks about Misra Rupushu. In Akkadian, Gvul is Misru. In Akkadian, Larhiv is Rupushu. They did whatever they did in order to enlarge their border. Now, this Misru is very interesting. I give you one example. I appointed the governors over Egypt, Sha'ilani Urapisha Kisurish. I thus enlarged the territory of Ashur, king of the gods. Murapish Mitzri Ukunduri, Marduk, who enlarged my border and my region. Also, in Azitawada. Now, before this. This Mitzru, of course, is the Aramaic Mitzra, translating in Targum Unculus Gvul. And maybe, this is Vayardifuni Ben HaMetzarim. Between the two borders. In Echa, maybe. Ben HaMetzarim, not between the straits, but between the borders. In Phoenician, in Azitawada, a king of the 9th century, have a beautiful, beautiful sentence, when you see how ancient Hebrew was written at that time, before the vocalization of Ben Asher. Now let somebody translate it. Probably pregnant woman. They ripped off the pregnant woman and killed her. Yarhev Anochi. I shall enlarge. Eretz Emek Adana, the land of the valley of Adana in North Syria. Limimtso Shemesh, Mimotsa HaShemesh, V'ad Mevu'ayihi. Mimtso Shemesh, V'ad Mevu'oh. From the sunset to the sunrise. Azitawada, 8th century. Phoenician. Yeah. But the whole idea of Yarhev Gvul, always in the vernacular of political. It's very interesting. You see, the vocalization of the Phoenician text depends on comparative semitics, on the vocalization of Ugaritic and the vocalization of ancient Hebrew, the eight. Now, I mean, you agree with me, the vocalization of Aaron ben Asher or Moshe ben Asher does not reflect the vocalization, does not reflect the classical Hebrew, the classical Hebrew of Amos. Maximum it reflects 4 or 5 centuries before them. Maximum. What, 4 or 5 centuries before them? 4th century? Right, the time of the time.
Exactly what consequence are we seeing between the different vocalizations right now that you mentioned? This is before Bar Asher. In other words, what are we seeing different?
Because the vocalization of this text, you see, if you would vocalize according to Bar Asher, it says, Yarchiv Anochi Eretz Emek Adana Limimtso HaShemesh V'ad Mevu'o. But this is another vocalization of a...
Something doesn't fit if you vocalize it that way.
Absolutely. When I could vocalize it in Phoenician and to show you exactly 80% how the 8th century Phoenician sound. But I cannot do it now.
Which would mean how the 8th century Hebrew would sound.
Most probably. With a little variety.
I mean to say that if you use Bar Asher vocalization, something will be missing here that we can, in a scholarly way, say it obviously doesn't fit?
Yes. Yes.
So what would be missing that...
Well, I cannot go into it. I have to go to teach you really vocalization. This is going to take me some time. I have to speak about Yifril. This is not Yifril, by the way. This is Yifril. In Hebrew, you say Arshiv and not Yarshiv. I cannot go into it. I'm going to keep my own legs. But this is a whole world of itself. Sometimes I fool around with myself. I don't have much time. I want to see how Jeremiah spoke. And I do, we have an inscription. This is from the Lachish time, of Jeremiah time. And we re-vocalize it. ותאר לך שהיום היה קם עמוס, אם עמוס קם לתחייה היום, היה שומע את הישראלים in Dizengoff Street speak Hebrew, he says, what is it? What is it? Good. למען ארחיב עם גולן, ויצאתי אש בחומת רבה, ואכלה ארמנותיה, בתרועה ביום מלחמה, בסער ביום סופה, והלך מלכם בגולה, הוא ושריו יחדיו, אמר השם. Sa'ar Yom Sufa. Very, very clear and very, very stark phrase in antiquity, specifically in denoting in a war period, in a war time. For instance, Sanherib is a metaphor, it's a strong metaphor, a description of battles well documented in the military text in Akkadian. Sanherib, for instance, would say, Kima, oh, I think maybe I should write it down. Just one. Kemo. Kima Tib. Mehi. Shamri. I bet you recognize one word here. Ananakri Azik. I bet you recognize another word. Kimatib Mehi. Like the getting up of the... Anybody wants to translate this in Akkadian? Shamri. Should know it. Shamaru, raging, Raging storm. Mehi Shamri. Raging storm. Shamaru. Shamri, Shamaru. Like the pick up, like the take off, Tib, Tebu. Mehi Shamri. Ana Nakri Azik. Against my enemies, Nokri enemies, Azik, I'll blow. Kemo, kom, ha-se'ara ha-shomeret, ha-se'ara ha-zo'emet, ha-se'ara ha-noteret, keneged oivai, afuach, o afiach, yafuach hayom, o mila nashav. So the whole idea of the storm in the vernacular of war, if you were in the army too, I was in the Israeli army. Histair! Histair!
What's called Red Storm Rising?
Yes! Desert Storm! Histair! So. No, this is really fine. Histair. So, Shumdavar and nothing new is under the sun. Second chapter. כה אמר השם על שלושה פשעי מואב על ארבעה לא אשיבנו, על שורפו עצמות מלך אדום לסיד, ושלחתי אש במואב ואכלה ארמונות הקריות, ומת בשעון מואב בתרועה בכל מלחמה. והכרתי שופט מקרבה, וכל שריה אהרוג עמו, אמר השם. Until here, he finished the prophecies to the nation. Now he starts with the prophecy to Yehuda, one pasuk, and the climax, the eighth nation, is Israel. And there, from Israel, we'll go to another different vocabulary, different world, different idioms of social, moral, and so on and so forth. We finish now with the terminologies, until now, of the political and military terminology in chapter 1 until chapter 2, verse 4. We could write an article about this. Political and technical terminologies. Military terminologies in Amos, chapter 1, verse 1 to chapter 2, verse 4. כה אמר השם, על שלושה פשעי יהודה ועל ארבעה לא אשיבנו, על מאוסם את תורת אדוני וחוקותיו לא שמרו, ויתעום כזבהם אשר הלכו אבותם אחריהם. The word מאס, a very interesting word, is attested many, many times concerning מאס תורת השם. But it's more than ma'as means really to despise, to have a contempt for, to disregard. Always employed in reference in Akkadian to the gods, lahavdil elef alvei avdalot, and the rites, R-I-T-E-S. Akkadian mesu is Hebrew ma'as. Here is a word, mesu, Hebrew ma'as. Mem, Aleph, Samech. Piludi, Ili, Lumes, I will despise the God cultic regulations. Piludi, Eli, the whole institute of God's rites and regulations of the Akkadians. Parsi, Lukabis, I shall trample his rights. Lukabis kavas in Hebrew, kaf bet samech, lichvos kvisa, which means to threat on. In many, many other cases, when mesu is implied as religious disregard to the gods. And it is employed in Hebrew in many, many cases of ma'as torat Hashem. In other words, if you want the semantic equivalent of ma'as torah, which means to despise, to disregard teaching, you would say in Akkadian, piludi, which means Torah, mesu. Means the rights of the gods. Means kol ha-minhagim, kol ha-hakim shel Hashem.
R-I-T-E-S. So that Is it not more teaching than the rites?
Well, Torah Hashem includes, the Torah Hashem includes everything that you have to do for Hashem, the korbanot and this is and you know. Absolutely.
Isn't that a later usage of Torah?
What?
Isn't that usage a little bit later usage
of Torah? No, Torah means the teaching, and the teaching is really included. The Torah comes from the verb yud resh hei, kamuvan, vara, waru, in Akkadian also to teach. And the teaching over here in the general sense means everything which is included in the teaching. In Piludu is exactly like Torah in this case. Very interesting. Somebody wrote an article about the Piludu and the Torah. Maybe I'll call you up about it. The Piludu is the rice, is everything that is included in the teaching of the gods. And there the teaching of the gods was not a moral teaching. I mean, they're not concerned. They're concerned only with the ritual. You see, because what happens with Amos, he really rejects the ritual. The whole idea of preferring the moral on the ritual. But Torah over here is there. Yes, Torah Hashem. What does it say over here? Take a look. The Chukav lo shamar. You have Torah and Chok. You have what you call maskusuto kore min haklal el aprat. You say Torah, the teaching all together, ma Torah chok, ma chok, kach vekach ta'ase, kach vekach lo ta'ase.
You don't have anything to do with Pulhan?
No. No, Piludu includes itself Pulhan.
No, the word.
No. This is absolutely Akkadian, nothing to do with the Hindu. Now we're going to some very interesting cases. Koh amar Hashem. Of course, halchu aharei, which means really to worship, not to walk after. And this also in Akkadian, alaku arki, many times, I cannot even go to it, this is classical, alaku arki ili, to follow the gods, which means to worship. Koh amar, and you see, I don't really teach you Amos, but I'm trying to depict what I can in the light of what the lecture is all about. Koh amar Adonai al shlosha pishai Yisrael v'arba'a lo ashivenu al michram b'kesef tzadik ve'evyon b'avur na'alayim. Very, very famous case. I have nothing to add here from Akkadian, but one point I would like to mention. The tzaddik means, does not mean a righteous man, but it means a righteous in court.
What?
Righteous in court. Michram b'kesef tzaddik, ve'avion b'avur na'alayim. Now, how's the na'alayim the translator? Just for you, this has nothing to do with Akkadian or Ugaritic. Some scholars would like to say it's nothing to do with na'alayim, because kesef cannot be parallel to na'alayim. If you want to take one extreme to another extreme, this is the regular interpretation. But some people say, some people say, since this has been taken from the legal vernacular, and he refers over here to the Shoftim, doesn't refer just to the simple people, Amos, over here, to the Shoftim and to the rulers. So some people say, Al Michram Bakesef Tzadik, they hand over the Tzadik because they get a bribe. Ve'evyon ba'avur na'alam. If you want, buy it. If you don't. Ne'ala means hidden gift, which means shuhad. What? Hidden gift. But there's nothing good in my case. Now we're going to one of the most difficult psukim. I'm not pushing my point. I'm just saying what scholars are saying, that here, over here, is kesef really would be parallel to na'alam, and we have it in Ben Sira too, and we have it also in the very famous speech of Shmuel, Va'alim Einai Mikem, remember? In Shmuel Perek Yud Bet, Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Bet, the very famous speech of Shmuel, we have there, his interpretation, yes. V'ani talachti lifnechem min urai ad ayom hazeh. I served you. Hineni, Anubi, imshor mi lakahti, v'hamor mi lakahti, v'et mi ashakti v'et mi ratzoti, u'miyad mi lakahti kofer, v'alim einai bo v'ashir lachem. I'm not pushing the point. I'm just telling you what modern biblical scholarship thinks today of, instead of na'alayim, na'alam, a hidden gift. Afim is a very interesting byform of the form of, anybody? Shuf. The Aleph is a byform of Shuf. The Ein Vav and the, if you want, Ein Aleph are interchangeable. And Shuf means to trample. Of course, we know it. Vatati Shufenu Akev, the classical case, of course, in Bereshit. And I want all of you to open Job 9:12. Bisa'ara Yishufenni. Trample me. Trample me bisa'ara in storm. So Shuf is a byform, Sha'af is a byform of Shuf. Now, do we have Sha'af as far as means to trample, to do injustice morally? Yes, we do. Let us take a look at Yehezkel, and I want to dwell on those three cases. Yehezkel 36:3.
Before you go to that,
yes.
You say that Ashur-Afim, the Aleph and the Vav, that there could be interchangeable.
Yes, that's a byform.
But do we see that attested elsewhere, Shin Aleph Ter, that could be translated as trample?
One, two, three cases. Yeah, I'm just giving you the example. Ezekiel 30. That's what I'm doing. You see, this is the methodology. I said, I'm not sure if I said, let me believe the will. Let's see. Let's see the cases. Maybe this Sha'af means really to pant, you know. To pants, you know, pant. Let's not say. No, this will be homonym, you know. Ezekiel 36:3. Rabbi, please. You was some mikrobe koram, please. Trample you from all around. Next, Tehillim 57 and Nun Zayin 4. Yishlach mi marom v'yoshi'eni in spite of my trampler, in spite of the one who tramples me, who does immoral justice to me, or maybe physical injustice. And the beautiful case is, of course, in Tehillim 56:2-3. And I think this is a good answer for you, Rabbi. Okay. And then, Sha'afu Shorarai Kolayom, Ki Rabim Lohamim Limimarom. Haneni Sha'afani Enosh, save me, because a human being is trampling me, i.e., doing injustice to me morally. Kolayom Lohem Ilhatseni. I don't know if it should not be Kolayom Lohech Ilhatseni. This is just between me and you. Why? Because I think the lohem over here is been taken from the lohamim, ki rabim lohamim li mimarom.
All these Sho'afis only show that it's a person who's doing battle with him. It could be trampled, but it's the person doing battle with him, not necessarily trampled.
Why? Yeah, it trampled me. Lahats means to trample. Yes.
And the next one is Sha'afu Shorarai Kolayom, Ki Rabim Rachamim Li Marom. Ki Rabim Rachamim Li Marom.
Could be the
Hamad. doesn't mean can't over here, but it could be, it's definitely somebody who's fighting with him. It could be trampled.
Yes, it would be. So, if we have, by the way, Targum Unkelos translate Hashoah, Targum Yonatan, I'm sorry. Targum Yonatan translate, translates Hashoafim al Afar Eretz Berosh Dalim, Lederach Analim Yatu Hashoafim, the Daishin. Remember the my Dashu al Dusham Baharutzot? The Daishin. Can beat it. Al Dusham Baharutzot Abarzel.
It's a Gilad.
What? What is it? You see, you have to realize that I'm not teaching you Amos. Because if I teach you Amos, it will be different altogether. It will be Akkadian, but over here is the Akkadian per se. I don't go to any other sources, post-biblical and so on. And to step on, from the point of view of moral behavior, is Akkadian will be kubusu, from the verb kabasu. Absolutely. Not only to kovesh, but kavas. Kavas, kavash, which means to trample on. And then we do kvisa. In ancient time, we used to do kvisa. We used to trample on the landry, lechabes, and then kabashu, which means a kvish, means you when you trample on. It's the same thing. So in Akkadian, kabasu kubusu, which is the semantic equivalent, not the etymological. Pay attention to what I'm doing. The semantic equivalent of Hebrew shuf. If I to tell you semantic equivalent of Hebrew shuf in English would be trample. In Akkadian will be kubusu. We have a beautiful case of it says the following. Sha'anam apala shamash anadinim eprisha to kubusi liddin. Should I say, yes, let shamash, the God of justice, let, are you laughing? Yes. Let shamash, the God of justice, treat me as if I were the dust upon which you have stepped on. So you have Epri Shatukubusi. Epri, Hebrew Afar. You ask me about the guttural Hebrew Afar, Epru. Ana Epri Kabasu. Will be the semantic equivalent of the Hebrew Sha'af al-Afar. And it refers to Shamash, the God of justice, the God of light, and many, many cases like this in the Shamash hymn. Here you see a different type of vocabulary which has been taken from the moral vernacular. Hashu'afim al-Afar Eretz. Now I need to say something about the pasuk, although it's not Akkadian. Hashu'afim al afar eretz berosh dalim. It's very, very difficult. The bet rare is very difficult. You would expect to have hashu'afim al afar eretz rosh dalim. The one who trampled the rosh dalim on afar eretz. Translate it to English. Hashu'afim al afar eretz berosh dalim. Dr. Shama, translate this literally into English, and you see that you're not. If you translate this into English, you recommend.
Trampled the dust of the earth on the head of these unfortunate.
Hashu'afim al afar eretz.
They're so down and out. He's stepping on them.
No.
Or they're buried.
No. Hashu'afim rosh dalim al afar eretz, because they trample the head, they don't trample the dust.
Right.
The idea is the moral in behavior of the high society, the judges, and so that you trample the head, not
can
the dust.
Can you metaphorically say that he has essentially buried these people though they're still alive with the injustice, and as he walks, he's just stamping on their heads?
The Seder. Translate this into English. Ashu'afim al. Now you know Ashu'afim al afar eres berosh dalim. Translate it literally into English. Well, you haven't talked. Shafim al afar eres, the one who tramples on the dust of the land.
On the dust that's on the heads of the unfortunate.
I don't see it. I don't see it. You're pushing. It doesn't go smooth. En safek shabet po im od mod kasha. Very difficult. But let's continue. Vederech anavim yatu. Of course, derech means mishpat. And I cannot go into it because I'm not teaching you Amos. Derech means mishpat. Mishpat anavim yatu. Anavim does not mean humble, but means the downtrodden. Not the humble from the point of view of Moshe Anav, but the downtrodden. Speaks over here from the vocabulary of the moral in court.
Why do you think Moshe Anav is not related to that?
I don't know. I thought about it many times, what you're saying now. I don't know. You know, it's so accepted that Vayish Moshe Anav is humble. That I, by the way, I wrote in Orientalia a whole 2-3 pages on the. You didn't get my stuff. On 2-3 pages on the business of Anav. And Anav usually really humble before the gods. And Vayish Moshe Anav. He's not downtrodden from justice point of view. I was thinking about it. But he was humble before his God. And you have it in the Zakir inscription of the 8th century Aramaic inscription. Zakir, Ana Ish Ane. Ana Zakir Melech, I forgot what the name of the city. Aram Ish Ane Ana. I'm just quoting you by heart. I'm a humble man before the God. The humility. But over here, Anavim really means downtrodden in court is a vederech anavim yatu, which means mishpat anavim yatu, very clearly. V'ish v'aviv ilchu ila na'ara leman halel shem kotzim. Now you would like what I have to say. Ish v'aviv ilchu ila na'ara, halach el means to have a sexual intercourse. This is not exactly so clear. What is the JPS translate? No. Now you see, that's my point. That's my point. Halach ahare does not mean that halach ahare in every case means the same thing. Halach ahare, alchu ahare avotam means the forefathers worshipped. Over here, halach, there is halach ahare. Here is halach el. There are two different terminologies. There halach ahare from the point of view of to worship other gods. Here, to go to a young girl.
A father and son go to the same girl.
Okay, I will translate the father and son have an intercourse with the same girl, and let me prove it to you. Midrash, I'm starting with the Midrash, for a kedjer. Midrash numbers, Rabbah, Shmot Rabbah, Barak 10. הנואף הזה הולך אל אשת איש והיא מתעברת ממנו. This is a No, absolutely not. It's a technical terminology, כמו ידע. It's a euphemism.
Right,
it
could be euphemism.
It's euphemism, but it's technical terminology.
Or it could be focusing on the beginning of the process.
Well, let me finish and then we'll see. You mean, yes, Holech L'eshet Ish is euphemism. Fine, I agree with you. But if you take it out of the euphemistic vernacular, it means exactly like Lada, to have a sexual intercourse. Omen text, Akkadian. Alaku Ana. Alaku Ana in Akkadian. Excuse me, means to have an intercourse, sexual intercourse. Alaku Ana, which means Lalechet El. El Baya. Ana means El. To go to. Text.
Maybe in Akkadian it was understood as the beginning of the process and speaking in a euphemistic manner.
Let me, maybe not. Let me give you an omen text. Right, of course. An omen text. Shuma Amelu. If a man. Amelu is a man. Then we have the very famous king, Evil Merodach. In the Tanakh, which means Amel Marduk. Or Awil Marduk, which means the man of Marduk. Shuma Amelu, the 100 times is started also in Hammurabi code. Shuma Amelu. Shuma Amelu. Anasinishti. Inna alaki ikal. Shuma amelu, if a man, ana sinishti, ina alaki, alach, sinishtu, in Akkadian means a woman. Sinishtu means a woman. If a
man,
huh? What are you saying? Aleph Nun? No, no, it ties Asha too. It's different.
Can you put it anywhere
that
I use
the Sinishtu?
Yeah.
To what?
The
left, I don't think so.
And all that
no, it's a regular word. It's one of the one of the regular words for an Akkadian. There's Ashatu and there's Sinishtu. The Ashatu is
of left, sinister, and woman, the left side, or something like that.
I have no idea. I know that Sinishtu is a regular word for a woman, and Ashatu is the Isha. That's why you have the dagesh in the Shin. Double Shin, which really originally is the Aleph Nun in Tata. That's the Ashatu. But this Sinishtu is another word. But Sinishtu and Ashatu have two different social status. You have Sinishtu, you have Ashatu, you have Hirtu. I cannot go into it. Two different social status. In Amtu, you have Ama and so on and so forth. It's exactly like Saranaga. Shuma Amelu ana Sinishti in Alaki Ikal. If a man eats during an intercourse, it's an omen. What happened to him? Anasinishti alaki mutu. He is incapable of having an intercourse. Technical terminology, Rabbi. This is an omen text. They have all kind of crazy omen texts, the Akkadians. I love the omen text. Because it shows you the milieu and the zitzim leben. How those people live? How could you know if people live? You don't know about people live from the inscription of Sennacherib. Or Esar Hadon, you live from the omen text, how people lived, you know, what they had in their mind, and so on and so forth. Most important is, V'ish v'avi v'elchu el ha'na'ara, leman halel lechem kodshi, of course, it was the worst moral behavior that could ever happen. The idea of alaku ana halach el na'ara, is Akkadian. Shuma Amelu, if a man, Anasal Tur Illik. Shuma, I'm going to write the whole thing. Ana, now I'm writing Sumerian. Sal Tur. Sal in Sumerian means a woman, and Tur means young. Akkadian, Tse Hirtu. If you wish Hebrew, Tse'ira, Zghir.
Tse
Hirtu? No, the Hebrew Tse'ira. Tse'ira is etymological. But this is the semantical. Exactly the same thing. Shuma, Amelu, Ana sal tur, ana sechirtu illik. If a man has been intercourse with a young girl, so ana lechet el atzeira. There it's not in the moral context. They, Akkadian, did not have any morals. The great difference between our society, the monotheistic society, and their society is like Shamayim Ba'aretz. They have no morals. They could practice everything that they want. But the idiom, la lechet el ana'ara, lema'an halel et shem kutshi. Next. ועל בגדים חבולים יתו אצל כל מזבח ויין ויין אנושים ישתו בית אלוהיהם. Let's take the seifa. Yen anushim is very, very difficult. The regular translation is the wine, the fine wine, right? Usually it is translated yen anushim, the wine of the find, based upon Exodus 21:22. Shemot, please, Shemot, the verb anash, yen anushim. Yes, wine bought with the fine that imposed. So the verb anash in Exodus... What does it mean?
With the money that they had, they bought wine, and therefore it's called Yen Anushim. They imposed a fine, they got money, they bought wine. That's how JTS.
You like it?
No.
Very good, bravo. I don't like it either. I don't think Anushim has nothing to do with the Anash, which means to have a fine. You know, Anash means in biblical, instead of punish, means also to have a fine. In Exodus 21:22, Anoshi Anesh. Va'anshu oto me'a kesef in Deuteronomy 22:19, remember Kavbet 19, va'anshu oto me'a kesef, and they find him 100 the silver shekels, whatever.
Rabbi Sassoon used to think that this word should be with the al. It should be understood as with the al.
Anush? The sick one?
Sick one.
But why do you need this, Rabbi? I have better thing for you. He's right. He is right, but it's difficult for him to prove. The interchange epigraphically between Aleph and Ayin, forget about it.
Because it's hard to prove it?
Okay. I'm very conservative.
Only later Hebrew it has, they say.
No, I mean, no. You know, even the Ayin, even the Ayin in a... Let's discuss it. It's very important for me to discuss these things because this is a matter of methodology. I'm very conservative. You never see me do something which is... I'm trying to do 100% conservative, which means to conserve the text. That's what I mean. Not conservative from JTS, you know. I'm not going to say it anymore. This is the Ayin in ancient Hebrew. Like, looks like an Ayin. And this is the Aleph. Impossible. I don't know a case that the Ayin and the Aleph are interchanged epigraphically. Yes, in modern Israel, Kulam, Ani Oseh, with an Aleph, there are. Ma ata Oseh ayom? I'm not a Maktanim. I have my nephew. I gave him a dictation, 12 years old. I said, Dudi, bo nishev tzad kacha nikhton Ivrit. Lo, atazob oti, ata kol amalim atanach shulcha, vizeh, atazob oti. My sister did not, you know, went out of the... Sateta min haderecha. She's still traditionalist, you know, she's not anti. I gave him a little dictation, 3 or 4 lines, 6 or 7 mistakes. Ayin and Het, Aleph. Alephin, Ainin, but this is only for the Galileim, you know. It's not for Bnei Yehuda. Nachnu Bnei Yehuda, the Galileim, lo yachlim la'alot la'tura, fine. Aleph Ayin. Aleph and Ayin. In a minute. Getting it. I think Rabbi Sassoon, I think he's right.
Where does the word Anush come to mean sick?
Oh, many Mahabakati Anusha in the Tanakh. Absolutely. Anush means very sick, severely sick. Makati Anusha, the Iyov. He is right in the sense that it will be very fit the context, but he cannot prove it from the point of view of epigraphy. The Ayin and the Aleph will never be interchanged. Why? Also, imagine, they always say,
But they think it was interchanged because of the translation, that people couldn't pronounce it.
You cannot. You show me one case.
Well, only from the Talmud we know cases. We don't know that. Right. We can't find a good biblical application.
Well, I'm not gonna cheat you and lie to you, Rabbi. Because I want to be invited next time, Rabbi Berry, you understand? I'm not exactly honest with you. There is interchange in the Ayin and the Aleph only in one word. Ga'al, ga'al. I cannot go into it, I don't have the citation. There is in this world. Rak babila azot. Somehow. Why? I don't know. Ga'al means to have go'al nefesh, which means to be discussed also. Now, how do you like this with Rabbi Sassoon? By the way, I read the, gave me the book, Yitzhak. Yes, very nice. I enjoyed it a lot. It's not my field, but you know, I read it. Yes, very nice. Arevna. Akedin Eneshu, which this Aleph E is an Ayin, which you ask me why they did not preserve the Ayin, don't ask me. Maybe they were Yekid Jews, the Akedin, but they don't have an Ayin. I know, most probably they did. But we don't have it in the epigraphy as an Ayin. Ugaritic has. But if the Ugaritic has, of course Akedin had an Ayin. But we don't have it. Eneshu. No. 50,000. By the way, Yen Anushim is a hapax, which means the compound or the idiom is tested only here. But you have Yen Hamasim. Yen Hamasim Ishte. The wine of the evil people. Yen, I don't have it in front of me, but Yen Hamasim Ishte, wine of the evil people. The whole business with the wine is very interesting because either the wine is called upon a certain figure or something, or it is called upon a geographical location. Also shaman and so on and so forth. In Akkadian Eneshu, it means to be weak, to be disadvantaged, to be disabled. Does Yen Anushim Ishte means the wine of those who are miserable or poor, but they have a little wine to make a kiddush? No, I'm just kidding, you know, kiddush, but they have this little wine to enjoy themselves. They even that they take from them. And exactly with the Rabbi Sassoon, Anushim. Maybe. Big question mark. I put myself, this is my insight, but you know why I like it? Because I like it, it's parallel to Bgadim Havulim. Now, take a look what happens here. Maimosim, they trample upon the one who is righteous in court. They trample upon the Evion, whatever you want to take the Evion to mean there. I don't know. They trample the Dalim. They invert the justice of the Anavim. They go to men and his, in Ish ve'aviv, I mean, ve'aviv ilchu el ha'na'ara, sexual immorality, incense, no, sexual immorality rather. Now we go v'al b'gadim havulim yatu etzel kol mizbeach, ve'en anushim ishtu bet elohim. So b'gadim havulim, what is, if we understand b'gadim havulim, then we might understand yen anushim. Now, everybody says that Havulim, the regular translation of Havulim, is usually, Haval means to take a pledge. How does JPS translate Havulim then?
They recline for every altar on garments taken in pledge.
Very bad translation. I was too young. Mitzvah Asar now knows more than me. The word habulim employs over here in juridical sense, context, to mean a person to distrains, distrains, which means really to take the beggar after he defaulted in the loan. This is getting habulim, not a pledge. I gave you a loan. You gave it to me. You didn't pay me back. You defaulted after 30 days. Then I take the begadim from you. This is the begadim habulim. Bidyuk. That's what exactly what I'm coming to. Exactly. In other words, to take only when the loan falls due, and the debt is in default. Exodus 22:25. Im havol tahbol samlat ra'echa ad bo shamesh. לא יחבור החיים ורכב כי נפש נפש הוא חובל. No, to take a pledge is fine.
No, but on the poor person who needs it, don't take it as
a pledge. No, it's a midrash. But to take a pledge, you take a pledge, you take something for him, but you have to return to him. Im זה עניין של נפש, you have to give him back. But if it's something, begadim havulim, you know, a person that doesn't have clothes, you have to give him back after the blessed. This is what begadim havulim means. Why? It is very interesting to note that also in Sifrut HaChokmah, in Proverbs 20:16, Lakach bigdo ki arev zar uva'ad luchrim havalohu. Kach bigdo ki arev zar uva'ad luchriya havalohu. In other words, haval in biblical Hebrew in some cases means to take the thing when the loan is in default. The etymological equivalent of Hebrew haval is again habalu. But again habalu does not mean what Hebrew means. It's etymologically they mean the same. In Akkadian, habalu means to borrow, to take on credit. But the Hebrew habalu is the semantic equivalent of Akkadian nepu. And nepu in Akkadian, in technical terminology in the law, means to take the garment or whatever it is if after the loan is in default.
Now you say that's a semantic equivalent. How do we know that's a semantic equivalent? Maybe it isn't.
Well, I mean, if you study...
How do we know that?
If you study for... Now, for this, I have, for instance, now to... You have to trust me. Now, if I need to go into the law of Hammurabi's now and to start speaking about Habalu and Nepu and to show you in the legal context what happens in Exodus 22:25, Deuteronomy, and also in the wisdom literature which
those
has been taken.
Those are consistent with both translations.
What?
Those sources are consistent with either translation.
The Haval?
Right, it might be a little push, but you can say... You're taking it as a guarantee that the person will pay. Now, you're saying that doesn't make sense, but that's a traditional interpretation. Why can't it mean you take it until he pays, then you give it back to him? But when he's a poor person, you give it back to him to use, and it becomes, of course, very tedious that you're going to take it after the fact. You say it's a dirashah, it's a midrash. Maybe that's true, but it's consistent with that pirush.
Well, be it as it may, if you're right, or I'm right, Begadim Havulim could mean the Begadim Shel Anashim Havulim. And that's why it's Yen Anushim. To the person. To the Begadim Shel Anashim Havulim, Im Lokhim. And this will be very nice. Which means the social trodden in the sense that they had to give their clothing either for a pledge or in default of loan. I don't disagree with you. No, I mean we open over to discussion, but then it goes very good to parallel to anushim, which means that refers to the person. the weak one, the disadvantaged one. That's my point.
The Havilim are the people who lost their garment.
Yeah. Yes, sir? Yes, it's very true. But he says, Lo yahbor rechaim varechev ki nefesh uchovel. If you take it as a pledge, well, you pay back, you get it back.
No, but
lo yahbor
rechaim.
What?
They needed to make their food with.
Well, I mean, it depends what's the loan. I mean, you want a loan, you have to give something. But if you take the rechev and rechaim ki nefesh uchovel after this and you never give it back, it's worse.
No, but Robert is saying, if the Pasuk is speaking about the people who lost their item, and these people, the rich people, are enjoying it, so it makes a little bit more sense, he's saying, because it's continuing the downtrodden. It's continuing the...
It's all right. I mean, I'm open to it.
But, see, Rabbi Sassoon said this together with Devarim, chapter 24, where it says, Lo tate mishpat ger yatom, ve'lo tahbol beged almanah. And then the next pasuk continues, Vachataki ra'idah mitzvayim, and Hashem took us out, like it does here in Amos, that the next pasuk comes out. And he thinks that the yatu comes from that same pasuk. Ve'al beged almanah yatu, it's like Lo tate.
No, but Al gadim havulim yatu etzel kol mizbeah. מה הם עושים עם הבגדים החבולים האלה? They have a party with a מזבח, and what do you mean מזבח? Over here you have a חינגה, a ritual party which connotes a sexual misbehavior. The whole idea of the מזבח או מזבחותם, that they put these בגדים חבולים and they are two, you see, they recline, you know, and they lie on the בגדים. That's what I understand.
No, he just wants to say, nothing to do with the understanding of the pasuk, has to do with the literary allusion that he thinks that Amos had that pasuk from Devarim prior to him. He wrote that because he wrote.
I cannot go into it because I'm according from the documentary theory, Devarim
right.
is later than Amos.
Right, so that's why he wrote this specifically to address that point.
Right.
That Lo Tate Mishpat Ger Yatom.
That's good. It's good.
And then the next pasuk is very striking. How it continues, the following pasuk in Devarim 24 and the following pasuk here, the following 15, have similar themes.
But I agree with him about Anushim. This is I like. Let me finish with one. It's not going to the Nara. Is Ish Va'aviv Olchim in the Nara?
Does it in any way parallel to Ashu Esher from there and the last one Shu Bet El Ohem? In other words, not Halei Hashem Koshi, of course it's not Nara to the Nara and so on and so forth, but is he addressing the Shu Bet El Ohem who is in some holy province? You don't mean just the prostitute.
What you want?
In other words, what I'm saying is, you look at these three lines. Each one has to do with a whole. The last two have to do with the holy preaching.
Right.
The first one sounds as if they're going just to a house of ill repute.
Right.
Well, we know in those days that the well wasn't attached to the Amadazan and so on.
Is that what he means? Is they're doing sexual thing in the thing, or is it a kind of a statement that they are using the wine of the downtrodden and also his beggar to perform a religious service?
And so how does the first one fit in?
More than doing a sexual thing, it's not about sexual, but they're using the...
No, but the sexual orgy is part of the religious service. The sexual orgy is the part of the religious service. That's why you have the Gdesha business and so on and so forth. Ve'al begadim havulim yatu etzel kol mizbeach. Ma mizbeach po. What is has begadim havulim to do with... I understand, let me go to Dr. Shammai, then I go back to you. You would like to say that Leban Halel Shem Kodshi should really come at the end of Pasuk 8. That's what you want to say?
Either that or that this Yaforah Na'arah has to do with another religious part of the orgy. In other words, it's not just a sexual orgy.
It's very interesting. I never thought of it. It's very interesting. It's very interesting, but I don't know. I can't prove it. But the sexual orgy, sexual religious orgy is absolutely very clear over here. Only because of the Mizbeach and Yain and Yen Anushim and so on and so forth.
This point is, Halel Shem Kodshi sounds like it's being done in a ritual context, in a religious context.
Clear. It's an antithesis here.
So where is it?
What?
Where is the religious context?
Oh, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, where is it? I'm asking.
That's where it is. That's what your point is.
That's what your point is.
No, but I'm saying, in what religious context could it be done? Well, not Halel Shem Kodshi.
In some temple service. They're doing some temple service.
But if it's Amud Ezra with Halel Shem Kodshi, unless it's something being
done
in... Hilul Hashem means the Abu Dazara that they do. It's like a double entendre over here. I would like Leman Halel, to tell you the truth, I would like to say Leman Halel Hashem Kodshi supposed to be like this. Ko amar Adonai al shosha pish'i Yisrael rabba lo ashivenu al mikhram ha-kesef tzadik ve'evyon ba'avur na'alayim ha-shoafim al afar erz b'rosh dalim ve'derech anavim yatu ve'ish ba'aviv ilchu ila na'ara ועל בגדים חבולים יתו אצל כל מזבח, ואין אנושים ישתו בית אלוהים, למען חלל את שם קודשי. I see, למען חלל את שם קודשי, kills the whole
continuation. No, but his way, it has to be there.
Because of the מזבח.
Because that's taking place in the מזבח.
Yeah.
That's telling you it's a religious ritual.
ואין אנושים ישתו בית אלוהים, it's also religious.
Exactly.
It's also, because the whole thing, למען חלל את שם קודשי.
למען חלל את שם קודשי, means, as you're saying, the double entendre.
Yeah.
It means that they're doing it in a way that it's a religious ritual, that they're Halel Shem Kodshi.
Yes, yes.
It's a sexual orgy. Why is it so important to mention that they're taking the bigot of the poor and the king of the Jews? Isn't it having a sexual orgy terrible enough that they have to say they're taking it from the
Well, he, of course, this is, he exaggerated. It's Ad Kedekach, Ad Kedekach. והאביון בעבור נעליים, if you want, עד כדי כך, שהם לוקחים את הבגדים ושם, ועל זה הם עושים את ה-sexual orgy. This is the worst of the worst. That's what Amos wants to say, I think it's right.
Because he's bringing out his point that the social justice, which they don't do, they don't take care of these people, they trample these people, and then they're using that to do their religious rituals, which are abominable.
No, but the religious rituals themselves are abominable. They were
right.
Using it to do
You see what I like this Leman Halel Hashem Kodshi after Beit Elohim. From structural point of view, I want you to pay attention now. I'm doing something structural, nothing to do with Akkadian, because I think that Leman Halel Shem Kodshi would come after Yishtu Beit Elohim Leman Halel Shem Kodshi. It includes the Na'ara, and it includes also the party, and it includes Beit Elohim Leman Halel Shem Kodshi. You see the antithesis. Now, it says something like this. ואנוכי השמדתי את האמורים מפניהם אשר כגובה ארזים גובהו וחסונו כעלונים ואשמיט פריו ממעל ושורשיו מתחת. ואנוכי עליתי אתכם ארץ מצרים והולך אתכם במידה 40 שנה לרשת ארץ האמורי. Now, ועקים מבניכם לנביאים ומוחריכם לנזירים, אף אין זאת בני ישראל נאום השם, ותשקו את הנזירים יין ועל הנביאים ציוויתם למור לא תנבאו. Now, over here you have a very clear chiastic order, ועקים מבניכם לנביאים ומבחוריכם לנזירים. Then he says נזירים, then he says נביאים. You see the chiastic there? Huh? You see the chiastic? Now, in chiastic order, no literary part could interrupt the chiastic order. That's why it's supposed to be something like this. ועקים מבניכם לנביאים ובחורכם לנזירים. ותשקו את הנזירים יין ועל הנביאים ציוויתם לאמור לא תנבאו, אף אין זאת בני ישראל נאום אדוני. Because it kills the chiastic order. From the literary point, אף אין נאום אדוני. אינני ממשיך עם הקיאזמוס. That's why, this is the point of view of structure of this. Then, that's why, I think the Halel Leman Kodshi of Beit Elohim Halel Shem Kodshi. It summarizes
something. Some chiasmus are AB with the middle part and then BA. You sometimes have that.
Yes, but not in the classical chiastic order. In the classic chiastic order, has to be A-B-B-A. Mibli Shrathing with interruption. But don't you think Rabbi is better over here? ואלן ויתם ציוויתים למור לא תנראו האף אין זאת נראו in the end which you summarize the whole thing. But this is only a point which I don't want to dwell. Now I want to finish with one more case.
You can't ask them they should admit to their sin. Half ends up in Israel. I did these great things for you. Isn't that true? But you gave them to drink. You ruined everything. You can't say, isn't that true? That's a criticism.
No, the contrary. It's criticism, absolutely so. That's my point. It is criticism.
Them, you don't ask them to incriminate themselves.
No.
You criticize.
No.
God criticized.
No, the opposite. I said, you did this. You did right. this. I did this with you. I did this with you. That's what you did. Isn't that true?
No, that's better with what I did for you. It's better what I did for you. Isn't it true that I did all this for you? Because the rhetorical question fits better with the first part.
All right. No, I'm not pushing my point over here. I'm not pushing my point. What I'm saying is usually in the classical chiastic order, usually there's no interruption of any different clause. Well, I mean in the classical chiastic order.
You have to have time to see that. In the Torah you find, you find chiasmus with a central point.
You do. Okay, I'm not pushing this point. להשמיד פריו ממעל ושורשיו מתחת. Now, with this I would like to finish today. להשמיד פרי. Now, this is what you call Mary Ismus is a formula of total annihilation. As Professor H.L. Ginsburg already saw, that pri and shoresh does not mean fruit and roots, but pri means a branch and shoresh means a trunk. The trunk of a tree and the branch of a tree. Now, we know that pri means a branch of a tree, of course, from pri Aitzadar. There's no problems there. It doesn't mean the fruit of Aitzadar. We know it very clearly. If you pay attention, that in Leviticus 23:40, pri Aitzadar is a spalal in Nehemiah 8:15, alim. Will you pay attention to it?
And alim are not leaves over there in Nehemiah?
Leaves.
Leaves?
Yeah.
Right, but not branch.
No, I mean the ale also could mean the branch, you know, the leaves with the branch together. The ale could mean also a branch, I mean the anaf. Heskel uses it. Heskel using it a lot. This is a beautiful thing, what you call inner biblical interpretation. This once I wanted to work on it many, many times. Say, Bakvar ha-Tanakh mefaresh ta'atzmo. It's exactly what the Basar Tzalui Afu in Chronicles, you know, and also with the head of Yaakov, I mean of Reuven in Chronicles 5, 1-5, that he said, why? Because why he did not receive the Bchorah. Because it was the head. They already interpret.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
More simply, doesn't Pri Aitzadar mean the fruit?
No.
If you look in Nehemiah, you'll see, and so we should take the leaves. So when you see how they celebrate it.
I want to...
No,
I'm not saying that pri does not mean fruit. Don't misunderstand me. In this context, pri means the branch of a tree. In a minute, you'll see. This case of lehashmid pri mimal veshorish mitahat in a curse formula. This is a curse formula. It's a curse formula. Pay attention to 2 Kings 19:30. Let us read it a few cases. 2 Kings 19:30. Would you like to read? Read loud. Good. Shoresh lemata pri lemala. And it is attested also in Isaiah 14:29. The pri?
First of all, if you want to say shoresh is the trunk, that's not lemata, the opposite. He's saying pri, lemata is the shoresh, is the roots, as we know roots. What's on the bottom of the tree?
The roots. And what's on top is the fruit.
So why are you calling it a trunk?
Let us look at Isaiah 14:29. You see, the trunk means the shoresh. You see, the trunk means the bottom part, means the shoresh and the geza. And the pri means the kol ha'etz. The lower like a fruit means ha'ale, shuhu, makbil, that is parallel to the entire upper part. You see, if you want to say an upper part of a tree, you would say, I'm not speaking about the top of a tree, it's a merit. I'm speaking the upper part of the tree, you speak about the anaf. We have also text with anaf in Shoresh too. We have a text with anaf in Shoresh too. If you want to say the bottom part of the tree, you will say the trunk. And the trunk, a geza, hugam yahadim a shoresh. What you have over here, a total annihilation, what you call a meriismus. And a meriismus is I will annihilate them completely. And this is also a regular curse formula. I'm going to refer you to the article of Ginsburg, it's not mine. Shoresh lemala, free lemata. This is his article, I think, in the Shoresh lemata, free lemala. It's in the article of one of the first reef. But if you pay attention to Eshmun Azar, it's a Phoenician king. He, if somebody would open my grave and would take from my grave all the hidden things that I put in my grave, the kesef zahav, you know, remember they used to bury with them all this. That's what's going to happen to them. Lo, I'm going to write it in the list. What's all what I have in the grave? Lo yikon lamo, shoresh lemata, ufri lemala. Shmon Azar, a Phoenician inscription, stuck phrase in a curse formula. Stuck phrase in a curse formula.
What year did you say that?
Shmon Azar.
What year?
Oh. 8th century. Classical case, what?